History of the Crusades. Episode 183. The Crusade Against the Cathars. The net closes. Hello again. Last week we took time out of the narrative to take a closer look at the little village of Montaigu, a community distinguished by the fact that its priest was actually a Cathar. This week we return to the chronology. If you cast your minds back to episode 181, an episode entitled Betrayal, you may recall that the network of Cathars painstakingly built up by the Oti brothers in the county of Foix was betrayed by Pierre Oti's personal assistant, Guillaume Père, who reported the activities of the Oti brothers to the head inquisitor in Carcassonne, Geoffrey Darbly, after becoming annoyed that the Cathar hierarchy hadn't paid a debt he had incurred while he was imprisoned inside the wall. As the spotlight of the Inquisition turned away from the cities of Albi and Carcassonne and focused instead on the county of Foix, the ramifications for the Cathars in this region, as you could imagine, were huge. The reaction of the Cathars in the Oti network seems to have fallen into one of two categories. They either bunkered down, strengthened their networks, and were more stringent than ever in hiding their faith and concealing the Cathar perfect, or they recanted their faith. When we left the narrative in episode 181, a group of Cathars from the town of Arc had come to the momentous decision to travel to Rome, confess their heresy, and throw themselves at the mercy of the new pope, Pope Clement V. Now, actually, as a way of circumventing the Inquisition, a detailed interrogation, and perhaps torture by the Dominican friars, this was quite a good plan. So, only a fortnight or so after the two perfects had escaped the trap sprung for them by the Inquisition in September 1305, and, incidentally, around the same time that the councillors from Carcassonne, who had been involved in Friar Bernard de Lisieux's doomed Majorcan plot, were being brutally executed, the group of Cathars from Arc set off on their journey to Rome. In the end, they were gone around 10 weeks. They didn't end up travelling all the way to the Holy City. Instead, they found what they were seeking in the city of Béziers. They confessed their heresy to the Bishop of Béziers, who issued letters of absolution to the members of the party in December 1305 on behalf of the papacy. A second letter confirming the absolution was issued on behalf of the French crown in Carcassonne, and the absolved former Cathars made their way back to Arc. Now, as you can imagine, the Cathars who renounced their faith in this way, as the Inquisition turned its gaze to their corner of the world, found their lives forever altered. While the danger of being caught up in the Inquisition subsided, their connections to their communities were abruptly severed. Ties between the Cathars in the Oti network were strong, but these were all broken when the former Cathars renounced their faith. To maintain their safety net, the former Cathars had to now steer well clear of their friends, family members, and neighbours who were still of the Cathar faith. Understandably, the feeling was mutual. On the whole, Cathars who had held to their faith despite the increased danger had no time at all for those who had crumbled under pressure and renounced their faith. Lifelong ties of friendship were broken, debts and business deals were abandoned, and the former Cathars found themselves having to forge new ties and friendships within the communities in which they had lived their whole lives. For the Cathars within the county of Foi who had stayed true to their faith, the increased activity of the Inquisitors in the region meant that they had to be extra careful, and the heightened danger seemed to strengthen rather than weaken the ties between them. Interestingly, the activities of the Inquisition in the county of Foi following the betrayal of the faith by Guillaume Père seems to indicate that Guillaume only gave general information to Geoffrey d'Arblay in exchange for absolving his prison debt. While the focus of the Inquisition turned to the region in which the Oti brothers had been operating, they didn't appear to have inside knowledge about hiding places or specific Cathar individuals or their families, information which Guillaume Père was certainly privy to. Instead, the Dominican friars, accompanied in some cases by soldiers, conducted raids on seemingly random villages and country properties in the county of Foi. In one memorable move, the entire population of the village of Verdun on Lauragais were arrested and imprisoned inside the wall. As Stephen O'Shea notes in his book The Friar of Carcassonne, the previous restrictions imposed on the Dominicans by the French crown appeared to be no longer operating by this point. Following the disastrous royal tour of the region, King Philip IV seemed to lose interest in the welfare of the people of southern France, and the Inquisition was given full rein to carry out their inquiries as they wished. Stephen O'Shea states, and I quote, "The king no longer placed a brake on the Inquisition. There was no authority to oversee the Dominicans. There was only complicity," end quote. Along with Geoffrey d'Arblay, two further appointments were made in the top echelons of the Inquisition following Guillaume Père's betrayal. The Dominican Bernard Guy, of Name of the Rose fame, was appointed as head inquisitor in Toulouse, and the Cistercian Jacques Fournier moved to the top of the Inquisition pecking order in Parmier. These two men will, in the future, have a huge impact on the persecution of Cathars in the county of Foi. Now, around 18 months after the arrest and escape of the two Cathar Perfect, around the same time, in fact, as Bernard Guy's appointment as head inquisitor in Toulouse, Bernard Clegg, the bailiff of Montaigu, married into a local Cathar family. The Cathars who had remained committed to their faith following the betrayal seemed to undergo a sort of revival at this time. Marriages between local Cathar families strengthened ties between them, and this certainly seemed to be happening in Montaigu. The Oti brothers were still operating in the Sabatez region on a business-as-usual basis. Despite the renewed attention of the Inquisition, Guillaume Oti made regular visits to Montaigu and tended to favour the family of Bernard Clegg's new wife, choosing to stay at their residence while he was in the village. From this time up until the end of 1308, there would be another three weddings in Montaigu, all of them strengthening the bonds between the Cathar families within the village. Really, the increased activities of the Inquisition didn't seem to slow the Oti brothers down at all. The Perfect were doing as they always had, moving stealthily from place to place, using their hiding places and disguises, preaching, offering support, and performing the consolamentum. In his book The Yellow Cross, René Weiss reports that the Oti brothers even began operations back in Arc in late 1307, despite the fact that most of the Cathars of Ark had turned their back on their religion and had renounced their faith. Around this time, the Inquisitors were regular visitors to Montaigu, frequently staying at the Clegg's residence after choosing to detour to Montaigu on their way to visiting the town of Axe. Since Pierre Clegg, the village priest, was a Cathar, and since Bernard Clegg's wife was a Cathar, these would have been interesting times for the Cathars of Montaigu, and would have elevated tensions within the village to unthinkable levels. But it seemed that the villagers were able to go about their day-to-day activities without attracting the suspicion of the visiting inquisitors. In A Nice Touch, René Weiss reports that around this time, the Cathar prefect Guillaume Oti changed his preferred lodgings in Montaigu. He stopped staying with Bernard Clegg's wife's family and instead began lodging with the Cleggs themselves, ironically using the same bedroom as that used by the Inquisitors when they stayed in Montaigu. In early 1308, however, things began to get real for Guillaume Oti. His wife, who had remained in the region while Guillaume and his brother Pierre went into exile and had stayed living in the family home while her husband performed his duties as a prefect, was summoned to Carcassonne by the Inquisition. Due to the betrayal of Guillaume Père, it was common knowledge in Inquisition circles that the Oti brothers were the instigators of the Cathar revival, and everyone knew that it was only a matter of time until Guillaume Oti's wife was called to provide evidence to the Dominicans. One of Pierre Oti's sons agreed to accompany her on her journey to Carcassonne. Her husband, Guillaume Oti, was staying in Montaigu, and his wife, whose name incidentally was Gaillard Oti, was able to detour to Montaigu to seek his advice. Apparently, Guillaume spent a considerable time talking to his wife and urged her not to betray the Cathar network. She responded that she would need to tell the truth, whereupon Guillaume stated that at least she could leave some things out. For instance, he told her she shouldn't mention the fact that they were meeting now during her journey to Carcassonne. Gaillard Oti continued on to Carcassonne and was interrogated by the Inquisitors. Unfortunately, the record of the information she provided has not survived, but René Weiss speculates that she would have done her best to protect her husband and his network of Cathar faithful. However, the Inquisition did conduct two raids on Montaigu later that year. Whether it was as a result of Gaillard's evidence, or whether it was just part of a general crackdown in the region, we will never know. The first raid by the Inquisition into Montaigu occurred in May 1308 and was led by none other than Pierre de Lusignac. Remember him? He was the law student who spotted Pierre Oti when the brothers first arrived in Toulouse and was bribed with food and other inducements not to report the newly arrived Cathar prefect to the Inquisitors. Well, it seems that by 1308, Pierre de Lusignac had flipped, changed sides, and was now working for the Dominican friars. Apparently, things hadn't turned out all that well for Pierre de Lusignac. He had developed a gambling problem, and René Weiss speculates that it was the money offered by the Inquisitors which may have induced Pierre to betray his friends. It's unclear whether Pierre de Lusignac ever converted to the Cathar faith, but he certainly had maintained his ties with the Oti brothers over the years, and was considered to some extent to have inside knowledge of the Cathar network. René Weiss states that Bernard Guy, the new head inquisitor at Toulouse, probably groomed Pierre de Lusignac as a spy. Pierre lived in the village of Comus, which was not far from Montaigu, and from Comus it would have been relatively easy to monitor the comings and goings of the Cathar Perfect visiting Montaigu. Interestingly, Pierre Clegg, the closet Cathar priest from Montaigu, had no prior knowledge that the raid was going to occur. Pierre's sources of information about the activities of the Inquisition were based in Carcassonne. This raid, however, was conducted under the authority of Bernard Guy at Toulouse. As a result, Pierre Clegg hadn't been able to play both sides as he had been able to in the past. Luckily for the people of Montaigu, despite the fact that they were not forewarned of the raid by their priest, the raiding party was spotted before it entered the village. It was difficult to approach Montaigu unseen, and a party of strangers led by Pierre de Lusignac would have attracted some attention. So the Cathars of Montaigu had a short time to warn the two perfect who were staying in the village, Guillaume Alti and Prédès Tavernier. The perfect had been drilled on what to do in this type of situation, Prédès Tavernier having, of course, already escaped from the clutches of the Inquisitors following the betrayal a few years earlier. The two perfect donned disguises that they had created for just this type of emergency, and with the assistance of a Cathar in the village, they were rushed from their current hiding place to an alternate house, right on the fringe of the village, which was well placed for the perfect to be able to flee into the mountains. According to René Weiss, the two perfect were still in the process of being moved to their new hiding place while the raiders were in the village. Distracted by searching houses, which the inside knowledge of Pierre de Lusignac pointed to as being likely hiding places for the perfect, the two perfect and their guide made it safely to their destination. The raiding party was unable to find any evidence that the perfect had been staying in the village. They discovered the loft that Guillaume Oti had recently been occupying, but failed to recognise it as a hiding spot. In disgust, the raiding party arrested five villagers, only two of whom were Cathars. René Weiss states that the fact that only five arrests were made, and that only two of those arrested were heretics, indicates that Pierre de Lusignac didn't, in fact, possess a lot of inside knowledge about Montaigu. While he clearly knew that the perfect regularly stayed there, he didn't know the extent of the spread of the Cathar faith in the village, and he didn't know who was a Cathar and who wasn't. The unfortunate villagers who had been arrested were locked up inside the castle at Montaigu to await transportation to the place of their interrogation. Meanwhile, the two perfect and their guide, who was a local man named Arnoux Vital, had slipped out of the village and were heading down one of the many mountain tracks. They passed through a meadow being used by some local shepherds to graze their sheep. One of the shepherds, Jean Pelissier, later made a detailed statement to the Inquisition about what he saw. Here is an extract from that statement. It's quite lengthy. And I quote, "It was nearly noon. As Pierre Bayer, Jean Marty, and I were grazing our sheep in those meadows, there came away from Montaigu, on the same track, the late Arnoux Vital, who was wearing a blue cloak and an axe around his neck. With him walked two strangers, who were not from Montaigu, and I had neither seen them before, nor did I know them. Over their other clothes, they each wore a large brown shepherd's cloak made from two pieces of cloth, so that the sides of their clothes were visible. Their tunics or their inner garments were of blue or green cloth. Each carried an axe on his shoulders. these three men came towards me and the other two. When they were next to the meadow of the Beelots, they turned off the communal track and crossed over a stone wall into the Beelots' meadow. They walked through the meadow where Pierre Bayer was grazing his sheep. Anu Vitel greeted him, and in return Pierre greeted Anu. Then they reached Jean Marty, whom they also greeted, as he did them. After this, I saw Anu Vitel and the two strangers go cross-meadow as far as the wood, which they entered. Immediately afterwards, Anu Vitel came out bearing a huge faggot on his shoulders, which he balanced with an axe. By the way, a faggot is a piece of firewood, just so you know. Okay, back to the quote. Anu Vitel went up directly to Pierre Bayer and Jean Marty, while the two strangers stayed in the wood. And when he joined Pierre and Jean, he rebuked them, in my hearing, for allowing their sheep to stray into freshly sown fields. When Anu was gone, Jean and Pierre grazed their sheep next to that wood until evening that day, and I saw no one else that day go to that wood. End quote. Okay, so disguised as woodcutters / shepherds, the two perfect made it safely into the woods, while their guide pretended that he was just out for a walk with a couple of strangers to cut a piece of firewood before heading back to the village. The shepherd, Jean Pelissier, who gave the statement, returned to Montaigu in the evening with his sheep, where he was informed about the raid and the escape of the perfect by his Cathar grandma. Jean included in his statement the fact that the next morning he saw Anu Vitel returning once more from the wood, suggesting that perhaps the two perfect had stayed in the wood overnight, waiting for news about the raid so they could carry information about who was arrested and where they were to be taken back to their network. The raid on Montaigu was by no means an isolated incident. Raids were occurring regularly in villages across the county of Foix as the Inquisition stepped up their activities in the area. Around this time, Geoffrey Darbley alone took 51 depositions, only 17 of which have survived the passing of the centuries. To say that the raid of May 1308 rattled the Cathars of Montaigu is an understatement. While the perfect had managed to escape, and while the extent of Catharism in the village remained a secret, it had all been a rather close call, too close for comfort. Worse still, their Cathar priest, Pierre Clerc, had been unaware of the raid, and his inside connections within the church had failed to protect the village. Well, it's time that everyone buckled in, because the Inquisitors are only just getting started, and firmly in their sights are both the village of Montaigu and the Cathar Perfect in the OT network. Join me next week as we take a look at the darkest years yet for the Cathars of the County of Foix. Until next week, bye for now.